It is almost 3 a.m., and you know what that means. Witches, goblins, and ghouls are about to be at their most powerful, and supernatural activity is about to reach its climax, if you will.
So pull out your harnesses and strap on your broomsticks, because it's time for
the Bitching Hour. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Woo-hoo. My name is Maggie, and I have a fake boyfriend or wife on every single professional sports team that I root for. So that includes the Philadelphia Phillies, my home team, Nick Williams, Reese Hoskins, and the Eagles, Brandon Graham, Connecticut Sun, women's basketball, Laisha Clarendon, and women's soccer, Megan Rapinoe. But also my my kind of like external teams, like Nancy's family or Yankees fans. So Aaron Judge is my away boyfriend. And I don't like New England teams typically, but if I'm going to a Boston game, I root for Mookie Betts. So
Mookie.
So those are my those are my spouses.
You know, honestly, you're just like queering family structures.
Oh my God, stop.
Yeah. Hi everyone. I'm Mia. I've seen all 21 seasons of Arthur as an adult. Welcome to our gay fucking podcast.
Life lessons to be learned there, though.
Yeah, I mean, every day when you're walking down the street.
Okay,
so we're back from our vacation. Welcome to season two of the Bitching Hour. We made it. So in today's episode, we're going to do a little bitch. You haven't heard us in a little while, so we thought we'd bring it on home and remind you what you're coming here for to hear us complain. So we'll start with a little bitch, and then after that, we're going to be talking about sports. So we decided to do a little series on bodies, and this episode is going to be on athleticism, sports, sport ball. You've heard of women in tech. Now we're bringing you women in sports.
That's right.
And then after that, we're going to be playing a little bit of Treating Your Girls Right. This is a new segment, so stay tuned to find out what exactly that entails.
Fabulous. Here we go.
Go.
Okay, so we're always down to bitch it out. We always have things to complain about. We have just been letting them...
Yeah.
We've just been letting them accumulate.
Building up the tension.
Yeah, but it's like a zit that needs to pop, so we thought we'd start with bitch it out right away. So I am going to start talking about something that has been annoying for a nice long time, but I just think it's always good to bring back. Please stop relying so heavily on the word identifies as or prefers, particularly when talking about people's gender identities and pronouns. I will use this word in a sentence. So, for example, talking about a non-binary person saying, oh, she identifies as non-binary. It's like, you could also just say, she is non-binary. Does she use she, her pronouns? That's also a good thing to check before starting that sentence.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Similarly, calling a trans woman someone who is, like, someone who identifies as a woman, while technically correct, also is offensive, because it implies that you don't really think they're a woman, you're just going to take their word for it.
Right.
So, like, maybe don't do that.
Right. She is a woman.
Same with pronouns. I don't prefer they, them, and she, her pronouns. Those are just the pronouns that I use. So, A, please use them, and don't make me sound like the most extra bitch on the planet for using them.
Right.
You also have pronouns that you use. I don't say that you prefer he, him. Right. You just use them.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Shut up. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
So, that's that.
Good. Yeah. My little bitch is about adults who love Disney. I just can't get down with that. Here's the thing. I didn't like Disney when I was like a four-year-old.
Really?
I mean, you gotta walk everywhere, it's hot.
Oh, you mean like Disney World and Disneyland? I thought you meant like the Disney franchise.
The whole thing. The whole package can really go.
Okay.
Here's the thing. Is Moana a Disney movie?
Yeah.
So like some, like, yeah.
So like that movie can stay.
And well, that's the thing is like most Disney movies like that I grew up with, like I'm like, oh, that's a sick movie. Lilo and Stitch, great movie. Like there's a lot of good movies. Like,
yeah.
I can't do it anymore and it needs to be said.
It's so funny. You know, that for me, I see what you're saying. It's not one that has ever really ground my gears in particular. For me, it's Harry Potter. It's like adults who are like, really fucking into Harry yes. Potter.
Do you know how many lesbians in the Boston area have their Harry Potter house in their bio?
I don't like that.
That's what we call a left swipe.
Oh, yeah. It is what we call a left swipe. That is rough.
That's a super dislike.
That is, yeah, that's not good. Or, like, people who do, like, they will have wands in some of their wedding photos and stuff. Like, the grooms and the bridesmaids people are all, like, casting a spell on each other. It's like, Expelliarmus, put it down. You're done.
It's over.
You are an adult.
Stop. Although I did start this episode talking about how much I love Arthur.
Yeah, so maybe we should just shut up.
But that's anxiety, okay? That's for comfort. Leave me be.
All right. Well, that felt good. I'm glad we got that out of our systems.
Thank God.
So we know that last time we had said that this episode was going to be about queers for the summer and how we like to dress and take care of our bodies in the summer. As you know, we've just started the body series, the body oddy oddy series. So we will get to it. Don't worry. But we wanted to talk about something else. So that's why we did what we did. So
that's it. Because it's our show and not yours. Okay. So it's summertime and
the living is easy.
We're horny. So, we want to talk about women in sports.
I did not know where that was going. And I know the topic, and I didn't know where
just
that was
kidding.
Going.
Okay. So, we wanted to do a little bit of a series on bodies. We want to talk about a lot of different things, and so the next couple of episodes, we don't know exactly how many yet, are going to be things pertaining to bodies. So, as a warning, we're going to be talking about bodies a lot. In this episode in particular, we won't be talking a ton about body image, self-esteem, issues with
eating or
weight.
Dressing or gender, things like that. Well, I mean, we're always going to talk about gender, but...
Right, welcome. You know. But that may be in future episodes, just as a heads up. But in this particular episode, we want to talk a lot about sports and athleticism, working out, and how that kind of... how gender and sexuality play into that, what our experiences growing up have been as queer women and people in the world.
I will also say this is sparked partly my interest in this very specific topic. It sparked because I went to a WNBA game on Friday. It was fabulous. We are in the Connecticut Sun fan region. So Mohegan Sun is a casino in Connecticut, and inside they have a little arena. And boy, is it my new home.
So
I had never been to a WNBA game before. I actually don't watch a lot of basketball. I know how to watch it, but I just... had never really, like, tuned in all that often, except for, like, really, really big NBA championship games and, like, March Madness. And I have really been snoozing on gay icons. The WNBA is the gayest, coolest, fiercest, most badass, just so cool. Also, like, all of these, I've learned, Nancy and I did a lot of Googling afterwards, and, like, the majority of these women are, like, friends with each other on their teams. They're friends with people on other teams. They're married to people on other teams, so there's lots of, like, power couples.
Right. What kind of snacks did the game have?
Some good ones. I will say there were no chicken fingers, so that was a hard no for me. But, you know, there's french fries, right. You got your sandwiches.
You got nachos?
Got hot dogs, nachos.
Okay, yeah. Do they have Dippin' Dots?
No.
Oh, yeah.
But I got a hat.
See, this is homophobia.
Actually, it was Pride Night. The game we went to was Pride Night, and it was out of control. The mascot was wearing a fucking gay cape. It was like, they're Ada Vox, you know, the drag queen who was on American Idol.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she performed at halftime. It was so much fun.
That's amazing.
It was truly, Nancy and I were like, did we step into the Twilight Zone? Like, what?
Pride never ends.
Pride never ends.
You thought it was over.
All right, so women in sports. Mia, okay. let's kick it off. What is your personal experience with sports? Were you an athlete?
I was and always will be.
Fabulous.
No, I'm just kidding. So I feel like in New England, when you're growing up, everybody plays soccer. It's just really common to have your kids play soccer. So I danced for like 6 months when I was 3.
Oh my God.
I was very cute. Aww. I did ballet and tap and I think jazz or something. But I hated performing on stage and I got a lot of performance anxiety, and I guess what I like would just go out there and just stand there or I run off the stage. And my mom eventually, like, one day I ran off the stage and she came back, and I remember jumping into her arms and saying, I don't want to do this anymore. And she was like, you don't have to. I'm paying a lot of money.
Right.
Like, I don't need this either. So that was when I was like 3 or 4. And then when I was 5 or 6, I started playing soccer. And mm-hmm. I played until I was 13. Mm-hmm. So I played for a long time. And I was midfield primarily. I was right midfield. And I was also center defense for a little bit. Ooh. Elise's dad, Elise from our bisexuality episode, her dad was our soccer coach growing up, and so she was sweeper, center defense, most of the time, and she was out for a season or two, and so I kind of took on that position, which was really fun.
Ooh.
They always wanted me to be goalie because I was tall.
Right.
But I was afraid. And I will say that I was really bad at being competitive enough. Mm-hmm. I really, like, I was pretty good at soccer, and I liked it a lot, but I would help people up if I knocked them down.
Oh.
And I, like, my mom and my coaches are always like, you have to be more cutthroat. Like, you gotta be. And I just really hated that aspect of it. How about you, Maggie?
Yes. I was very much an athletic little kid. I also danced as a, like, really little kid. And then I danced again in middle school. And mm-hmm. I did, in middle school, I, like, did some musicals. So I guess backing up. I started swimming year-round when I was 4 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And loved
That's
it.
Young.
I was very young. Yeah. I was like, you know, like little kids when like their bathing suits, like your mom gets you a bigger size bathing suit because she knows you're going to grow into it. And so it's like, I'm not going to spend money again on another
yeah.
suit. And so then like you have like a little saggy butt because yeah. like it doesn't fit. That is like
oh.
every photo of me as a child is that.
Oh.
So I've, yeah, I've been swimming for, I swam for a very, very long time. Year round. I loved it. I got really burnt out by about the 8th grade. I swam from 4 and a half straight until like the 8th grade. And when we moved out to California when I was 12, things really amped up. Like I joined the team at Santa Clara International, which is like a very good team. I was made it for about 2 months before I was like, I cannot
mm-hmm.
do this anymore. Like I'm 12. This is really not the environment I want to be in. And so I moved to a slightly less intense, but still intense team and just kind of got burnt out. And so then I did like jazz and tap and hip hop and musicals and I was a nerd.
Fun.
And I still swam a little bit, mm-hmm. but just not as often. And then in high school, I got back into it. So very aggressively. And I started playing water polo and I was like a little asshole jock. So
yeah, I was never really a jock. I really liked soccer, but I always was like, going to the game listening to, like, My Chemical Romance, like, before the game. I also got, so I had performance anxiety when I was a little kid, and I got anxiety really bad when I was in middle school, which is why I ended up quitting soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have, like, what I now know were, like, full-blown anxiety attacks before mm-hmm. the games, but I was like, no, I'm fine. And I would throw up before every soccer game.
Oh, no.
And I was, like, so nervous about it. Which, and then when I started playing, I felt fine, but
yeah.
I just hated being watched.
Yeah.
I hated, like, everybody watching me. So that's, like, an interesting aspect of it, too, I think, the performance.
That's very true. That's something that, well, I guess two things out of that. I mean, so that's something that happened to me a lot in high school. So I started swimming year-round again in high school, and I did. I swam for our high school team. I swam for a club team. I played water polo in the summers, and starting my junior year, I played water polo in the fall for school as well. So I was just in the water all year round, and particularly, it happened in water polo too, but particularly before individual swim races and for my high school team, I would get so sick before pretty much every single race. Like, I thought it was, like, normal to just, like, constantly have a stomach ache for your entire life and,
yeah.
like, have, like,
yeah.
nervous hives.
I can only imagine with a sport like that where people are watching you alone.
It wasn't even so much people watching me as it was, like, every time I got in was, like, another chance to, like, prove that I deserved to, like, be alive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's, like,
yeah.
to prove that, like, I had any
pressure.
Reason to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was, like, it was so fucking stressful. And there was part of it that, like, I really loved, but also, like, part of it, which I'm so glad I don't do anymore. And, but I was going to ask, you know, speaking of high school, did you keep doing sports or exercising into high school? Like, what was your, into
yeah.
your teenage years? What did you do?
So, I quit before 8th grade, I like, the summer before 8th grade, I think, which I remember being really hard because I was so close with the girls on my team.
Mm-hmm.
We had played together since, I also went to Catholic school in a school that was preschool to 8th grade. So, we all were in the same school, so we all played on the same team. So, quitting soccer was, like, a big social thing. It, like, really isolated me in a lot of ways from a lot of friends. I mean, stayed in contact with a lot of them, but so it provided a lot of benefit and security in that way, which I'm sure we'll talk more about. But So from like 8th grade to 10th grade, I didn't do anything. And then Elise played tennis in high school and got me to join the tennis team junior year. I really wanted to play volleyball.
That was always like a cool girl sport, you know?
Everyone plays volleyball so hot.
Did they call them VBGs at your school?
We didn't have it. We didn't have volleyball. Oh. We had girls hockey, but we didn't have volleyball.
Our volleyball team was like really good. They were called the VBGs, the volleyball girls. They were so hot. Bye.
It's those shorts.
It's those fucking shorts.
I wanted to wear the shorts. I wanted to be like cool in the athletic.
Yeah, and people always want to date them.
And they like get hurt a lot, but they're...
But like in a hot way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not getting hurt like the girls lacrosse players who like would just actually just get like the shit kicked out of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was such a cool, like when I was a kid, I thought volleyball was so cool. But we didn't have it. So so Elise was like, you should join tennis. So I joined tennis. And I was actually pretty good, but I didn't have like any actual technical knowledge. Mm-hmm. I just managed to get the ball over the net.
Fabulous.
So I like, that's what it takes, I was baby. Like, just like a golden retriever. I just was like, oh, tennis ball, I'm going after it. And I would like manage some way to coordinate my body to get it away. But I became really good at serving. My coach taught me like very technically, made me just practice serving for like multiple practices. All I did that whole couple hours or whatever was serve. Mm-hmm. So I was a doubles player and I ended up winning a lot of matches because I would just ace.
That's awesome.
Serving. So I can still serve pretty well, but Elise is really good. Elise is like, she was our first singles. And so it's kind of funny when we play against each other because I'm just like fucking flailing. And she's like very skilled.
I love that.
So that was fun. And then in college, I didn't play any sports, but I continued. I got really into weightlifting actually in college, which we can talk about too. Mm-hmm. Also, when I was in high school and I played tennis, I had a match at Mount Holyoke.
Oh, wow.
Because I grew up, like, the high school in South Hadley played, we had a match against them at, they played at Mount Holyoke's tennis courts. And I think I was committed to Mount Holyoke when we played the match.
Wow.
And I, like, had my Mount Holyoke sweatshirt and was embarrassed to wear it.
Oh, that's so cute, though. Yeah. So I definitely do want to talk about, like, what kind of women's bonding happens in female athletics. And I kind of want to, like... To kind of round out talking about my own high school career, too, that's a kind of a good lead into it. So I, as I said, I swam and played water polo all of high school, and I knew early that I wanted to swim in college. Like, that was, like, on my to-do list, and it was something that my family and I had been talking about since I was in middle school. And then I kind of did, like, the de-escalation that you do as you start to get older, where you're like, okay, I know by the time I'm 10 that I'm, like, not going to do an Olympic track. And then I know by the time I'm 14 that I'm probably not going to do, like a Pac-10 track. Like, I know, like, which is, like, you know, top swimming colleges. Mm-hmm. And I know by the time I'm, you know, by the time I was a sophomore in high school was the year that I decided that I wasn't going to swim D1 at all. Mm-hmm. That I was like, I don't want to pursue that. And I kind of kept it in the back of my mind that I would swim, like, maybe like a crappier D1 school, but didn't. And so by like junior and senior year, I was looking at D3 schools and like seeing if that was going to work out. And so like swimming was my entire life in high school. It was a co-ed team because like swimming typically is in a way that a lot of other like team sports are not, but individual sports can be. And so weirdly enough, like swimming wasn't really a huge source of like women bonding identity for me until about my senior year when I started to feel really differently about it. And I can talk more about it later. But for me, like being an athlete, like was a huge reason why I chose Mount Holyoke. I loved the idea that I was like, even though I had a lot of like co-ed sports experiences, like I was going to be going into a space that was like really intense and like very, very women focused. And I loved the idea that the athletics department was like focused around women and about women, that all the resources went to women. And so I was like, for me, that was like my driving thing was to do that. I ended up quitting within my first season at Mount Holyoke, flailed out, like truly the biggest flame out on the planet, like came in ready to do it, like was doing great and just fucking had a meltdown and quit.
Just like couldn't, just didn't want to balance everything or just wasn't like,
I was
as passionate.
I had such a good senior swim season. Like it went so well and I improved so much senior swim season and like got to a place where I was really, I had also had such a bad senior year of high school. Like emotionally I was so stressed and I put so much of it into swimming that like, it's almost like I was like, I can't
touch any of this again. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't be around this. And I didn't get along fabulously. I didn't get along poorly, but I didn't get along fabulously with a coach either in college. And it wasn't working. Like, mm-hmm. I came to school like a hot fucking mess. I was drinking a ton. I was like, had a really bad binge drinking problem, and swimming was just not working with that. And mm-hmm. I was like, I can't fucking do this anymore. So yeah. I quit.
I mean, I think it's a really big deal to quit something, because I think we talk about this less with girls and women, mm-hmm. but I think that, like, when you are someone who plays a sport your entire life, that is such a huge part of your identity.
Yeah.
And I think that the transition from high school to college really illuminates, like, what else is there in your life? Mm-hmm. And having to make a decision like that is really fucking hard.
Absolutely. And I always thought that, like, you know, I assumed, well, I'm going to go to a women's college, so I'm going to go to a space where, like, I'm going to have... I liked the idea of having control over myself and control over my decisions. But I think there's something particularly true for a lot of women when they go to college that first year are in environments where it's not, obviously there's a lot of unsafe environments that women are in high school. But we all know that, like, particularly sexually, there are a lot of really unsafe things that, like, situations that women are put into when they go to school, or they don't anticipate coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember feeling like so... I like swimming used to be the thing where it was like, okay, I have control over my life because I am an athlete who, like, knows my body so well. Like, I am so in tuned with what I'm doing. I'm a captain of my team. I'm, like, intense socially. I'm intense physically. And, like, I remember coming to school and being like, wow, there's, like, so much shit in my life that I don't have control over, or I feel like I don't have control over. And so swimming was just like, I can't keep up this almost like facade that I'm strong and intense. Like, I just need to, like, have a meltdown.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting. Like, how, so talk to me a little bit about weightlifting. Like, how did that factor yeah. into your emotional journey?
Yeah, totally. I don't know exactly how I first started becoming interested in weightlifting. I think that I always wanted to do, like, running. I always wanted to be a good runner, and mm-hmm. I never was. And actually, after graduation, when I was living in Western Mass, I got really into running, and I was running a lot. I was like, I would run on my lunch break at work in, like, the blazing sun,
ooh.
The middle of the day. I would run like 6 miles and then go back to work. It was wild.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I haven't run in a while. But I would listen to podcasts a lot while I ran, which was really fun.
Oh, cool.
So, like, you know, things change. But I hated running. I just didn't have, like, the mental patience for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really got interested in weightlifting because psychologically it really fit with me at the time. It allowed me to progress really quickly, that every time I went to the gym and weightlifted, I felt like I was improving.
Oh, cool.
And I think also, and it was faster paced. I would work out faster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like... you exert yourself and then you rest for like a second, and then you exert yourself and you rest for a second. And I think too, I felt like I was in a safe place to learn how to do it
mm-hmm.
because of the gym at Mount Holyoke. Mm-hmm. I think first of all, a lot of people at that gym don't use the like squatting racks and like weights because mm-hmm. a lot of women are discouraged from doing it. There's a lot of myths about bulking up, which is just like,
right.
first of all, why is that a bad thing?
Right.
For women to look muscular. You know, like that we've internalized that like women are not supposed to not be petite.
Right.
And also I think women are intimidated because they think of it as dangerous.
Right.
Or that they could hurt themselves more easily, which could be true.
Right. And also haven't been taught, because you're not encouraged to do it, you're not taught how to do it correctly.
Safely. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, those things are all bummers, but they made it so that a lot of people didn't use it, so I felt comfortable. There weren't a ton of people around who knew how to do it,
mm-hmm.
making me feel inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
And being in a gym that was primarily women, I just felt, like, really comfortable figuring shit out and trying stuff and being left alone while I worked mm-hmm. out. So I got really into it, and I basically just started looking up, like, weight training routines, and I would go on, like, bodybuilding.com and look at weight training routines. And I remember I first started looking, and I would always put like women, for women at the end of the search.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, these are all the same exercises.
Yeah.
Like, this is not different. And it doesn't
need to
be different.
How do you mean? Like, they were like the same kinds of
Yeah.
stuff?
Like our bodies are all the same muscles. So why am
right.
I, why, what would be possibly different about working out biceps on someone who was assigned female at birth as someone who was assigned male?
Right.
You know? And I think that at the time, like thinking my my concepts of gender itself started to expand. And then I was like, wait a sec. Like, I am still in the habit mm-hmm. of thinking about this thing that pop, like, in pop culture has been, you know, women's exercise is low weights, lots of reps.
Right.
And men's exercise is high weights, few reps, grunting and screaming and whatever.
Right. Veins.
Right.
Bunch of veins.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I was like, wait a second, this doesn't really make sense. And I started to kind of get interested in the science behind it. So I ended up actually making a zine called Buff Chicks. I never, like, did anything with it. That's I so still cool. have it.
How many did you make?
I think I printed a couple and I left them in Jacksonville. So I finished mm-hmm. the zine when I was in Jacksonville. So I did a summer internship in Jacksonville between junior and senior year of college.
Jacksonville, Florida.
Jacksonville, yeah. Florida. It was amazing. You might think Jacksonville's a weird place. It is. But I really loved it.
You're correct.
Yeah. My college roommate is from there and I had gone and visited and just really liked it. So I did an internship down there and lived at an Airbnb with, like, a bunch of weird characters.
Oh my God.
And it was a blast. And I just, like, dicked around. I didn't have a ton to do. The internship was not a lot of responsibility. So I joined a 24-hour gym. And I would go
oh my
to the gym,
God.
Like, sometimes twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, work out and have fun. Like, I just was, like, fucking hanging out.
Oh, my God.
And I became, like, friends with, like, dudes in the gym. And I'd, like, spot them and stuff. It was, like, I was, like, growing real hard. But I started writing this zine about why weightlifting was a feminist issue for me. And why it was so important.
Oh, my God.
That women talk about, are taught about weightlifting, are taught about mm-hmm. how to do it safely, are taught, like, the, you know, there's the three big lifts, which is, like, your deadlift, your squat, and your chest press.
Yeah.
And then accessories and how to, you know, and it's not that complicated, but it's really intimidating. So I made this zine and I had, like, my little routine and it was really fun and I made a lot of improvements. I haven't weightlifted in a couple of months. I got back into it at Simmons, where I go now, mm-hmm. and was using their gym, which is a lot smaller and has a lot more students from other colleges. So it's not right. that same, like, women-centered.
Yeah.
Or, like, just not very popular. Like, there's a lot more people there. But, yeah, it was a really empowering thing. It was, like, I felt really strong and I felt really, like, confident in my body's ability because it was a reliable, you know, mm-hmm. When I was running, I mean, I still love running. And I think that running does something different for me psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when I was running, someday I'd just have an off day or I would have eaten something shitty the day before and, like, just the salt that I'd eaten made me slower, sluggish, or felt shittier. And sometimes I would just have an off day, like, mentally I wouldn't be there and my run would suck. I would be really slow or I just wouldn't feel like finishing or I just didn't want to do it. But weightlifting basically felt, you know, sometimes I might not feel as good, but I still, like, improved. I could still be stronger each yeah. time that I went. And it was, like, a thing that I love, like, data. Mm-hmm. And I love, like, analyzing, like, oh, you know, like, my own statistics, which is just, I'm just type A. But it was really cool to see, mm-hmm. like, oh, last week I could only do this, and now this week I can do this and this.
That's awesome, though. Did you ever feel, like, that feeling really resonates with me of athletics in particular, but just exercising being a way to feel good about my body and myself, like, in times of, like, mental unrest and, like, physical mm-hmm. mental unrest or self-esteem issues, like, pretty much across the board, exercising was a really good way for me to feel like, okay, like, even if everything is awful, like, I can still do things. Like, yeah. I feel very useful. Did you feel that way as a little kid, like, playing soccer and...
I think so, yeah. And I felt... because I had a really strong kick when I was a kid, and I was always, like, the one who, like, did the corner kicks and stuff like that. I could bend it.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt a sense of accomplishment. I felt confident about mm-hmm. that. And I felt just kind of, like, badass. And my first boyfriend ever, we were in sixth grade, was also a soccer player. And I remember, like, being, like, him thinking that I was good at soccer made me feel like, yeah, fuck yeah. Like, I'm on the same level as
you.
Oh,
my God. That's so cute.
Yeah.
In high
school, we were just
school,
best friends. We just, like, skateboarded and played soccer. We kissed, like, 3 times in 9 months.
Oh, that's great. Honestly, that's how all of my dating men should have been.
But, I know. I wish it wasn't. All like that. What about you?
Well, actually, so in high school, I loved it because I felt like there was so, like, being so closeted to myself and, like, not knowing what was going on mm-hmm. with me, it was, like, it was so helpful to have, like, a physical outlet literally 20 hours a week where mm-hmm. I was, like, completely draining myself and, like, being, like, so grounded in my body and then, like, just spent. I loved that. Mm-hmm. I loved feeling really powerful. I also loved, like, I've always been really tall. I, like, have always been a lot bigger than most, like, girls in my class years growing up in school. And I remember when I joined water polo, I didn't know how to play. I have jack shit hand-eye coordination. Like, when I tell you, it's like I can barely, like, walk and chew gum. Like, I am a water-based person, and water polo is not the same as swimming. It was so, oh my God, it was so bad. I found, my mom and I went, and when she was, my parents were moving earlier this summer, and my mom and I were going through boxes of my old shit, and I found a note, like a report card kind of thing from my water polo coach that said, you do great with this, like, your attitude is great, you work so hard, like, you lift so hard, like, you swim so fast, you really need to work on shooting and passing.
The key components of this game.
But I loved the feeling that I was like, okay, I might not be very good and, like, well, I haven't played water polo since I was a little kid, but, like, I can go into the weight room and, like, work my ass off. Like, right. I can lift so many fucking weights, and, like, I loved the idea of being able to take care of myself. Like, I love that. But the guys I dated in high school, I had two pretty serious relationships, and both of them were so, I don't even feel guilty saying this to the public, they were just, like, so self-conscious about the fact that I was a really good athlete. Like, I dated a guy for such a long time who was, like, he was, like, okay at lacrosse, like, he was, like, pretty good, and I went to every single one of his games. He came to, like, two swim meets in 2 years. And bitch, I was MVP my senior year. I literally won the Scholar Athlete of the Year award, and the little bitch, like, never came to my events. I dated another guy who was on the water polo team. He was on the boys team and I was on the girls team, and he also, you know what he said to me once in spring season when I was swimming? He was like, I don't like swim season as much, your boobs get so much smaller. Like,
no.
Honestly, like, there are times when I look back and I'm like, Margaret, why did you hang out with such trash? You were a dyke goddess. What the
you
fuck?
You didn't know.
I just didn't know. I just didn't know.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
And it, yeah, yeah. And I totally relate. And, you know, I definitely want to talk about this throughout this series of, you know, I've struggled a lot with just, I mean, I think we all have, like, feeling weird physically in our bodies and psychologically. There's so much going on. And I find that, like, physical connection to my body through exercise is one of the best ways to make me feel, you use the word grounded, to make me feel grounded, to make me, like, kind of recenter and refocus. And I think that weightlifting was especially helpful for that because it stopped being about being small.
Yeah.
It became about being strong, which sounds a little bit corny, but is really true, that it was about what I was doing, not what I looked like or not losing anything. It was about gaining something, and it was about proving something to myself. And, you know, I think that I mentioned before, you know, that my interest in kind of, like, I love the numbers parts of it. I love, you know, I still have, like, charts where I write, you know, like, last week I did this week I can do this and blah, blah, blah when I lift weights. But I do that with nursing. I do that with studying in the same way. I how many hours did I spend studying for this exam, and then what did I get on the test, and what will I do next time to change that? Like, I do that same kind of analyzing of my performance. And I think that's probably a way that I kind of tackle the fear of failing something is kind of, like, analyzing the numbers part of it. And I think that it brings me a sense of accomplishment and satisfaction and pride. And it makes me feel like I know myself to do it.
Definitely. And I think it's, you know, I think it's really interesting that you said it wasn't about me being small, because I think, like, in terms of what that means mentally, like, the idea of, like, boosting yourself and, like, not having to, like, discipline, like, using athletics to discipline your body as a way to undo the way that society disciplines female bodies is so powerful and cool. But it also, it can be wielded in such a dangerous way. Like, it was, it, to me, like, the most upsetting parts of athletics were when, like, the things that I was doing to take control over my body were being used against me. And, like, because some of the most, like, upset about the way I looked and the way I presented, like, was doing athletics. I remember, like, being super athletic and not curvy at all, and, like, just, like, a fucking unit in high school was, like, I was embarrassed about it. And I can think, too, of, like, I also am someone who's, like, relatively tall and large, and, like, wow, when you're a little kid, people make fun of girls who are, like, really tall and, like, like, you know, kind of in the way muscularly. Like, I also know that some of the, like, most offensive shit that people do body-wise to men, and it can turn into, like, such transphobic shit, too, is to talk about, like, men being short as, like,
yeah.
the most, like, the biggest insult that you could ever give
right.
to someone.
Right.
And women, too, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that it can be so powerful, but so dangerous, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you feel about the divide between kind of women's sports as they are allowed in the media, like mm-hmm. the kind of like white women doing yoga and like Pilates and Lululemon and like the whole yeah. thing versus like literally like things like the WNBA and like women's tennis and women's soccer, which mm-hmm. are like much less sexy.
right.
Well, I think it's sexy.
But. Yeah, much less palatable by like a
yeah.
super misogynistic society. Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting too because we haven't really spoken about, I mean, obviously it's part of the whole conversation and I don't want to say this in a way that's like, oh, we'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't want to do a disservice to this topic that I'm about to talk about by making it just a part of this episode, because I think this, what I'm going to say, elicits its own full episode. But talking about access to sports
yes.
and class, and yes. also talking about ability
yes.
and physical ability. So, like, you know, I don't even want to really start to tease that stuff out because I think it would do a disservice to just include that in this episode. I think that mm-hmm. that's something for its own episode.
Agreed.
But so, yeah, I think that something that always frustrated me about, like, the Lululemon
mm-hmm.
world is the images that puts out of exercising in women.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, if you don't look a certain way, you shouldn't be in the gym, even though to look a certain way, you might need to go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, this, like, affluent, like, I'm not going to spend $60 on something that I'm going to sweat my
through.
Butt in.
Yeah. Nope.
Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting to think about, like, the flip side of the, like, kind of daintier feminine sports, like Pilates and yoga and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, which are all difficult.
Right.
They're challenging physically.
Right.
But, and I'm critical of them because I'm like, they put out this image that women have to look pretty when they're working out, or that right. exercise for women has to... It can't be too aggressive because aggressive mm-hmm. is masculine.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that saying that kind of pigeonholes like how difficult being a dancer is or things like that.
Like ballet dancers aren't like tougher than Navy right. fucking SEALs.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
So I think that's an important thing too to think about is like, you know, in ways that we think about like yoga and Pilates versus like dykey sports or like
right.
sports and aggressive like team sports and all this stuff is like, this dichotomy, but also that within like yoga and dancing and stuff like that, there are like really fucking serious badass athletes.
Right. And also that like, you think that there are no dyke ballet dancers.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's so the...
I saw Black Swan.
Same. Amazing. And the divide, I mean, I think you're totally right too. Again, I think that access and ability are things that we need to talk about really in depth, but the way that that's also divided is on racial lines. Like
mm-hmm.
there's not a question in anybody's mind when they're like, oh, the WNBA, like that is a gay league.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also like a league that is primarily women of color.
Mm-hmm.
Like even like look at, I think swimming is a perfect example of like one of the whitest sports with one of the whitest histories in mm-hmm. the United States, which has like female swimmers at the Olympics look like the most fucking intense, like so huge, shoulders are so jacked, like no boobs, like the best, right? Like so good, so good, but is like not known for being a dykey sport.
Right.
I don't know if there are any currently out swimmers in the United States who are like of any kind of notoriety.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's so interesting to see also like, it's not, obviously it's very gendered, but like how racialized the entirety of it is and like what we take seriously. I mean, again, we're a nation that like doesn't like our men's team, our US men's team doesn't make it to the World Cup and is shitty. And so
right.
we think that as a nation, the sport that the entire world fucking loves, we are like, oh, well, it's not real. It's not really cool.
Right.
At the same time, our US women's team
is unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And gets paid no money.
Right. Like, do you remember the statistic about like how much, so the women's team won like $1 million.
Oh yeah.
When they won, and the men's team got like $30 million when they lost, mm-hmm. or something like that.
I know. I looked up recently that the cap, the annual salary cap for the WNBA is I think like $125,000 a year.
You can make that as a real estate agent.
100%. I mean, I'd like to make that much money, but like.
I don't know why that's the career I thought of. I'm like, oh, you want to be a power dyke? Real estate. Not really, but.
Okay. Hot take. That's the new spot.
Yeah. It's really horrible. Yeah. And I think that we often talk about like the glass ceiling and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And people are always talking about like fucking tech, or they're talking about business, or they're mm-hmm. talking about. You know, like, but sport, like professional sports is a real career, especially in this country. It's like a huge way that people are become millionaires from mm-hmm. nothing. But we are not going to talk about the disparities mm-hmm. in women and men, you know? Absolutely. Or I feel like people do. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, but like the WNBA is more boring than the NBA.
False. It's better.
Yeah.
It's so much better.
But I'm just like. Like, I feel like people talk about it now, but they're still, like, it's like, but what a shame. And the amount of you have to dedicate your entire life. I mean, about how much time you spent swimming in high school.
Right. To not even swim in college.
Right.
Like, it's unbelievable.
Never mind if you are on track to become a professional athlete, and then you are, you know, and I think the other thing, too, is that I feel like there's all this pressure for kids who are really good at sports growing up to try to become professional athletes, but that pressure doesn't go away once you attain that. Also, I just hate that it's NBA and WNBA.
I know.
Like, I'm going to start calling it the MNBA.
Oh, I've started calling it the World Cup and then the Men's World Cup for soccer.
Oh my God.
Yeah. In the US, I'm sorry, but we have no excuse to be calling it the Women's World Cup.
Right.
Those men are just.
But yeah, I'm going to start calling it the Men's National Basketball Association.
Oh my God.
But
one thing that's so interesting, like, so, like, going to this WNBA game, it's great because you're seeing, like, one of the things I've always loved about women's sports that I see in professional women's sports is, like, how many different types of womanhood you get to see. Mm-hmm. But particularly with out queer athletes and out queer athletes who are gender nonconforming in some way and kind of vocal about the fact that they're gender nonconforming, there's something really special about seeing, like, anything close to a disruption of the gender binary in sports mm-hmm. and what that gets to look like, which I guess you could arguably you see in a lot of women's sports anyways, is a disruption of like a traditional gender binary, but also how that is a reflection of how as a society masculinity is still seen as gender neutral or like mm-hmm. can be gender neutral, whereas like, you know, even men's gymnastics or mm-hmm. like sports that are traditionally coded as feminine, like the emphasis on like strength and aggression is still so, it's just so prevalent. And what it means for male athletes to come out, I'm not saying it's not a huge risk for a lot of female athletes to come out, because it is.
Right.
But I think that the risk that men have of like never being drafted again, mm-hmm. like is so, I just think it so shows us that it's not just, okay, like, our sports is very, like, binary gendered. It's also that our sports is, like, very rigidly heteropatriarchal.
Yeah.
Like.
Totally. And thinking about, like, I remember when, what year was it that the U.S. women's soccer team won the World Cup with, like, Hope Solo, and it was, like, everywhere.
Oh, my God. I don't remember. But every year.
When that, like, really big time mm-hmm. happened, I remember how much buzz there always was about seeing them dressed up outside of,
yeah,
like when they were going to events, like seeing the U.S. women's soccer team like dolled up. And I remember one time I was getting a burrito at a place in Springfield, and they had the TV on and they were watching a soccer game, and it was a men's soccer game, and all of the men were going to like their locker room, and they're all in suits. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and everyone was just like, oh yeah, like here they are, here's the players or whatever. But no one was talking about their appearance. And I was like, whoa, they all look so fancy. They look so nice. Like, I mean, of course they're all like super like fit, but they're wearing these like fitted fucking fancy ass suits, cause they mm-hmm. make $1 million. It wasn't the US men's team. I don't know what team it was, but you know, they all have like perfectly manicured hair, like their hairlines were just cut like 7 seconds before they were filmed, and you know, their skin looks full. And I was like, they're so dolled up. But the ways that we talk about seeing, because like like, to most people, the difference between, like, that man in a suit and that man in his uniform is not that different. But the difference right. between a woman in her uniform versus in a dress and heels is, like, oh, now she's, like, an object, mm-hmm. a sexual object. Mm-hmm. Versus before, she's, like, neutral mm-hmm. in that masculinity.
And you see, like, I think Serena Williams is a perfect example of this. Like, in the way that so many horrible things, like, from men all over the place, but also from particularly from white women too, in racializing her body and mm-hmm. like talking about it, like her size and her strength, and like using it to other her and like marginalize her as being like she must be taking steroids or mm-hmm. she's like an absolutely, it's like to almost like dehumanize her,
right? And it's like, if you had been working at this sport for this long, you're just gonna be really fucking strong.
Also, like, why? Since when is that a bad thing?
Right.
But, like...
she's, like, the best tennis player of all time.
Yeah, like, thank God she's very strong. Like, that's how you do well in a sport, typically, depending on what the sport is.
Right.
But, and it's so disheartening that I think the way that a lot of people have come around to, like, particularly with Serena Williams, with other female athletes as well, to saying, like, oh, no, it's cool. The way that we as a society have started to celebrate athletic women's bodies mm-hmm. is to just hypersexualize them, is to say, no, it's not gross, it's hot. Right. It's like, no, actually, it's just
it's
okay.
Just fine.
Like, it's just chill.
A body.
Like,
right.
Like, it's you don't have to want to fuck somebody to not hate them and want them dead. Like, there's a middle ground.
Right. Like, right. There's a middle ground of just, like, dignity.
Right. Just, like, basic human awareness.
Yeah. Totally. Totally.
Mia, do you have any kind of final thoughts or wrap-ups about this?
Yeah. I think that for a lot of people, exercise can be a really empowering thing, especially mm-hmm. for women who are made to be disconnected from their bodies, mm-hmm. to think about their bodies as objects, not as dynamic experiences of the way that they feel mm-hmm. And experience their lives. I think that basketball is very sexy. I'm also... just want to make it clear that I'm from Springfield, which is where basketball was invented by James Naismith. So if we could just make sure everyone's aware of that. The Basketball Hall of Fame is a great spot. There's a Cold Stone Creamery inside.
Girl, I'll take you.
I will take you there. But yeah, I think that there are so many benefits to playing sports growing up, especially as a girl, for me. Being able to have an outlet where it was okay for me to be a tomboy, mm-hmm. Building community with other women and seeing other women be strong and encouraging each other mm-hmm. was, like, really powerful and really cool. And I just, like, you know, but I also recognize that it's, like, not for some people, that yeah. it doesn't do that for others. And I think that that's important, too.
Totally. Totally. And I think my closing thoughts kind of are in line with that, in that... it can be such a beautiful way to connect with people when you're all using your body really intensely at the same time, not with each other necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so I think I just want to echo that it can be it's a cool way to start this little mini series on bodies, I think.
Yeah.
It's a good way. It's a good little warm up, you know?
Yeah. So. Warm up.
So for this next segment, we want to talk a little bit about how we're going to be treating our girls in 2018. So we have seen on Twitter and around the internet that there are things going around about, oh, in 2018, we're treating our girls blank. Mm-hmm. And then fill in with like a really basic bit of human decency. So like mm-hmm. in 2018, we're treating our girls like we're letting them eat dinner. You know, right. like.
I think it started as a serious thing.
Oh, really?
Like in 2018, treat your girls right. And then it was like. My boyfriend does XYZ for me, or, like, I do XYZ for my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And people were, like, kind of humble bragging about how they do things, which, like, is nice, but also a lot of the things Maggie and I thought were really funny, because it's like, what do you mean you haven't been giving reciprocal oral sex to your girlfriend? Right. Like, what? I mean, if both parties are interested. Okay.
So we just thought we'd do some basics, too, about yeah. how we're treating women.
All right.
Okay, cool. So I'll start. In 2018, we're treating our girls right. We're taking care of the children that we are parents of together, and we're not calling it babysitting.
But we're probably going to post an Instagram story every time that we do. Daddy. In 2018, we're treating our girls right. We're listening to their thoughts and respecting their opinions.
Oh. Oh, God.
Hopefully.
Okay. in 2018, we're treating our girls right. We're just saying it didn't work out when someone asked why we broke up with our ex, not she was a psycho bitch.
Oh my God. Amazing. So good. In 2018, we're treating our girls right. Baby, you should get the guac. I know it's extra.
Aww. In 2018, we're treating our girls right. We're saying, nice haircut, instead of, well, I actually prefer it longer, when she goes to the salon.
Oh, no. What else you got? I want to hear all of them.
Mine are all really angsty. Okay.
I am into it.
In 2018, we're treating our girls right. We're walking past them down the sidewalk without saying anything, touching them, making animal noises, staring at them, or purposefully standing in their way. And finally, oh no, I have two more. In 2018, we're treating our girls right. We're asking them how their day was when they come home from work. And
it sounds simple.
And in 2018, we're treating our girls right. We're not expecting praise for doing basic household chores.
Ooh. Ugh. Heinous. Heinous, heinous, heinous. So, if you're not getting these things from your significant other,
bye.
Dump them.
Nancy.
Okay, so that's it for the first episode in this body series.
Woo!
Thank you for joining us. We hope that you like this new series. And if you have suggestions for future episodes related to this or other topics, be sure to send them in to us. Mm-hmm. Next week, we'll be back with another episode. We're going to be talking about grooming. So we'll be talking about hair, body hair, hygiene products, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So tune in to hear about where we go to the barber.
So as always, we welcome your comments and your feedback on Instagram and Twitter, and of course, just in our DMs and on our website, thebitchinghour.org. We also want to point out that we have been featured in 17 Magazine, which we're so excited about. We wrote an article about queer healthcare, which if you haven't yet listened to all of season one, that was episode 9. So go back and give it a listen and read our article. It's posted on our social media and let us know what you think. We'd love your feedback.
Yeah.